Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi dedicate this show to their deceased son and sibling, Scott, and to all of the parents and other family members who have lost loved ones before their time. Each week, Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi and their guests will share stories of loss, hope, and renewal.
Hello, I'm Dr. Gloria Horsley with my co-host,
Dr. Heidi Horsley.
Each week we welcome you to Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who suffer the loss of a child or a sibling or a grandchild or maybe just a friend. And always the message is others have been there and made it before you and you'll make it too, and you need not walk alone. If you're listening to our Thursday live internet show, please join Heidi and me on the show by calling our toll-free number 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792 with questions or comments regarding the losses in your life. These shows are archived on our website, healingthegrievingheart.org, and the compassionatefriends.org websites. They can also be downloaded on iTunes, and we're also on selected radio stations. You can go to our website to hear about those stations. Well, Heidi, good morning.
Morning, Mom.
And I'm going to start out with an email today, and the email is about our guest last week. Do you want to just fill our audience in a little bit about him?
Sure. Our guest last week was Bill Hancock, and he wrote a book called Riding with the Blue Moth. And what it was about was after his son Will died in the 2001 airplane crash, he rode across country 2,700 miles. He pedaled 85 miles each day, and he did it in memory of his son. And he did it as a way to heal along the way.
Yeah, and Bill wanted to tell you all, he forgot to mention it last week, that all the proceeds from his book go to a scholarship, I believe, fund for his son, Will.
And I would totally recommend the book because it reads like a novel, and it's an amazing book, and I couldn't put it down when I started reading it.
Yeah, it's fun to read. Well, apparently Ray could not either. We got an email from Ray from Tacoma, Washington, and we want to tell you folks that we really enjoy your emails, don't we, Heidi?
Yes, absolutely. Keep them coming.
And Ray says, after hearing your show with Bill Hancock, I ran right out and got his book. One of the things that most impressed me was his relationship with his wife and how she supported him on his ride. Being a bereaved dad, I like to hear that death of a child doesn't destroy a marriage. Thank you all for what you and Heidi do. Well, thanks, Ray, for that email.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's such a myth that just because a child dies that you're going to get a divorce. I mean, we've heard from many people, and some people say in the long run their marriages have become stronger because they've been through so much together.
Yeah, and for some reason it comes up on the media a lot, so I don't know why people, you know, keep perpetuating that, but there have been some study done by Compassionate Friends that shows that that isn't the case.
And, I mean, I think you go through trying times and tough times during your grief process, but marriage is about that anyway, so you're going to have trying and tough times in every marriage.
Absolutely, and you've lost so much that you really, losing a marriage is not something that you have the energy to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, today, Heidi, we're going to have kind of an unusual topic, but it's really important and one that I think needs to be discussed, and that is making arrangements and plans after the death of a loved one. And these that we're talking about are not just funeral arrangements, but they're also arrangements about what to do with the body or whether you don't have a body, and what about viewings, and whether you do cremation and those kinds of things. And some families are really forced to deal with some very traumatic things, like we know the families from 9/11, difficult things along the way after their loved one died. And I just wanted to tell a little bit about our son, Heidi's brother's death. He died 23 years ago in an automobile accident, and he and his cousin's bodies were burned. And I had a friend. I worked at the University of Rochester. I taught in the School of Nursing, and I had a friend whose brother died in World War II, and she said, you know, you really ought to see the body no matter what. So she kind of convinced me along that direction, and we did see the body, and you know, it was the funeral director took care of it, wrapped him in gauze and that kind of thing because he was burned. So I found it. How did you find it, Heidi?
I am so glad that we were given the opportunity of viewing a body because as a child, I mean, I was 20 at the time, but you look to your parents for direction on what's going to happen, and you all said, look, we have an opportunity to you know, view Scott, and this is what he's going to look like. Do you want to? And we all said yes, and I am so glad I saw him. because there was a part of me that believed that he really didn't die, that he and Matthew weren't really in the car, that someone had kidnapped them. I couldn't believe that this could happen to healthy 17-year-olds. So seeing his foot in the coffin and recognizing it, knowing that that was him, was very comforting for me. I don't know. I needed proof, in a sense.
Mm-hmm. And, I found it comforting to say goodbye, too. And, mm-hmm. you know, but what we found working with the 9/11 families is that it seems to matter a lot early on. Isn't that right, Heidi? But later on, not so much?
Yeah, and I think everybody's different and everyone's, you know, has their own opinions and their own beliefs about how it has been for them. But yes, early on people kind of wanted some proof that that really, their husbands and their fathers really were in the Trade Center, that that really was true, and their siblings. But later on, yes, as you know, time went on, it, the reality set in that they weren't coming back and it was hard for everyone regardless of whether or not you saw a body or not. And I also wanted to say, like you said, Mom, saying goodbye was important for me too, and I did it in the coffin. I mean, I held him in the coffin. I kind of kissed him goodbye and held him, and I was glad I could do that.
Mm-hmm. So it's unique with every individual. Some people, some of you out there decided not to see the body. Some of you have. Some of people wanted. Well, let's talk about the 9/11 families for a minute. The Twin Trade Tower. It's been 5 years, and now someone just called me from Canada because they just found some more remains after 5 years.
Yeah,
it was a reporter who called, and he wanted to know how the families would react to this. And it's very unique how people react to this kind of thing. In the first place, some people wanted to see body parts. Some people did not.
Some people wanted to be phoned that there was, you know, remains found, and some people don't. Some people are like, it's been 5 years, we don't want that information at this point.
Yeah, please don't call us. And then some people, they would call them, and after maybe this is the third call, and this time they wanted to see them.
Absolutely. And like you said, sometimes we don't have options of whether or not we're going to view bodies, because sometimes we have no bodies. And
yep.
People have done really creative things also with urns and memorials and burying caskets with just people's things in them, things that they liked that didn't have bodies. So there's many different ways you can mourn a loss and celebrate a life, even
Absolutely.
If you don't have a body.
And I think that's what our guest today will be talking about, too. But also I want to say, if some of you are angry out there that family members suggested that you not see the body, but yet they did, I've heard a lot about that. Have you, Hyde?
Absolutely. I think sometimes people try to protect people, and they say, oh, we don't want you to see the body. It'd be too difficult. And that's really a decision that each individual has to make. I know that I've talked to women particularly that have been protected by well-meaning husbands or spouses or whoever. And
Or kids.
Kids
talk to people whose kids don't want them to see the body.
That's a big one. And they've been protected, and in the long run, they kind of wish they had been able to view the bodies.
Yeah, but if you didn't see the body, you've got to say that you did the best you could at the time, and so did your family, and you need to figure out some way to get through that.
And oftentimes these funeral homes, and I'm sure Karen can speak to this better than me, but they can take bodies and they can make them look a lot better for viewing.
Yeah. However, most of the audience that we're talking about today are beyond that.
You're right.
So you may pick up some things that you can do now, but also I really think that you need to work on your anger if you're feeling tremendous anger and resentment that other people saw the body and you did not, or which is generally the direction it goes.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to write about it, drop us an email about it, and continue a dialogue about these kinds of issues.
Well, and it kind of reminds me quickly, because I know we have to get on with the show, but of my grandmother, because when she had a baby that was born dead, and he had, only a half an arm, right, Mom?
Withered, yeah.
Oh, yeah, withered arm, and so her husband wouldn't allow her to see the baby, and she didn't even know he had this arm. And she really wanted to hold him and touch him and kiss his fingers and toes and say goodbye to him and, you know, that kind of thing. And he wouldn't allow it because he thought he was protecting her.
So
she lived with that for years.
Right, exactly.
With that regret.
Yeah. So if you can get it out there and write about it and try to deal with it, there are other people out there that are having the same issues you are. Well, Heidi, would you like to introduce our guest today?
Sure, I'd love to. Our topic today is supporting bereaved families making the necessary decisions of loss, and our guest is Karen Lee. Karen is a bereaved parent whose son James, 19, died in a car accident on July 8, 2003. She and her extended family, including surviving son Robert, have worked to create a nonprofit organization, Memory Jar, to help other families facing death. from funeral planning to memorializing their loved ones and grief resources. Karen's primary goal is to honor her son by helping others during this very difficult time. Additionally, Memory Jar is working on creating a program to help families in need to bury their children in Orange County, California. Although her grief journey is still in the early stages, there is a certain peace that she and her family obtain knowing that her son is being honored with each family they help. Welcome to the show, Karen.
Thank you. Thank
Hi,
you.
Hi, Karen. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much.
Have you talk about your organization. You're in California.
Uh-huh.
And tell us about how you got started. You know, it's going to be time for us to go to break, and I'm thinking that maybe we'll say, after we come back from break, can you tell us about your organization, how
of course.
It got started, and also we want to hear about your son, James.
Thank you. Okay.
We're coming on break now. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley. Please stay tuned to hear more from Karen Nee about helping families after the loss of a child. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, and please stay tuned to hear more. These shows are archived on our website, healingthegrievingheart.org. Stay tuned for more.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
Hello, this is Dr. Gloria Horsley, host of Healing the Grieving Heart. Many of you have asked Heidi and me about our forthcoming book for parents on helping teens deal with loss. We are pleased to announce that the book will be published by Rainbow Books and will be available in your bookstore spring of 07. Visit our website for the quote of the week, as well as information on our next book, Keeping Your Marriage Strong After a Profound Loss.
The challenges we face day to day create physical, intellectual, spiritual, and emotional tensions, which affect the way we feel. Our body sends us signals, pain, stress, worry, that originate in how we think, feel, or behave. We're All a Little Crazy host, clinical social worker, and therapist, Debbie Benching, and her expert guests look at the various influences that mold professional and public views of mental health, treatments, and methods to achieve emotional well-being. Learn to manage difficult circumstances in life and relationships with integrity and confidence. Express emotion more clearly and gain depth in choices that lead to mental and physical health in your relationship and your life. Tune into We're All a Little Crazy with Debbie Benching, broadcasting each Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. We're All a Little Crazy. Clarity, healing, and change through personal growth.
Omega Institute is the country's leading center for holistic studies. Now you can experience selected workshops from Omega in the comfort of your own home. Join us for a live web broadcast with John Friend, the founder of Anasara Yoga. In this dynamic workshop, we learn the Hatha Yoga system that is a celebration of the heart and looks for the good in all people and all things. To find out more about our live web broadcast, log on to our website, www.eomega.org. That's www.eomega.org. Or call us at 800-944-1001. That's 800-944-1001.
Do you want to live a more productive life in spite of your pain? Pain is something that has happened to you. It is not who you are. Tune in to Pain Tamers, time to control your pain. Become your own best advocate. Become informed, equipped, and empowered to fight chronic pain together with Pain Tamers, time to control your pain, with host Helen Dearman, every Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Voice America Health and Wellness. Your life, your health, your network.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
We now rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who suffer the loss of a loved one.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm your co-host, Dr. Heidi, with my mom and host, Dr. Gloria. Our topic today is supporting bereaved families making the necessary decisions of loss and our guest is Karen Nee. Karen is a bereaved parent whose son, James, 19, died in a car accident in 2003. She and her family, including surviving son Robert, have worked to create the nonprofit organization Memory Jar to help other families facing death. Karen's primary goal is to honor her son by helping others during this very difficult time. Although her grief journey is still in the early stages, there is a certain peace that is obtained knowing that her son is being honored with each family she helps. Welcome back to the show, Karen and Gloria.
Thanks, Heidi. Hi, Karen. Well, Karen, when we went to break, we just introduced you. Could you tell us a little bit about your organization and about James? And I must say, 2 years bereaved is pretty new.
Well, it's a little, it's actually 3 years.
3 years,
but,
okay.
It's, I know it's still very new, and I'm still experiencing all the different stages.
Mm-hmm.
So, when James died, it was actually the first funeral I'd ever attended. So you can imagine that I didn't have any clue what was to actually occur, and you're in the greatest state of shock and numbness that a person can ever experience. So you can't really think that clearly, and I'm very, very fortunate that I have just a phenomenal family and wonderful circle of friends, and we were able to put together, we had 3 days to do it. Put together the funeral and the burial and a gathering afterwards. And then what was really important to me is I just didn't want anybody to forget my son. I still feel that way vehemently today. So I would search the internet and, read books and look for ideas. And I realized that everything was so scattered around. And at that frame of mind, when you're, shocked and numb and you don't have much time, how could a person ever put together a tribute that was really indicative of that person's life? And I realized there's got to be other people in the same position as me that don't know where to turn. So that maybe I can kind of pull all these resources together.
Now, when did you decide this?
It was actually fairly close after James died. I'd say maybe 3 or 4 months.
Uh-huh.
Because I was listening to, you talk about Bill's book with the Blue Moth and how his way of grieving was, riding his bike.
Right.
Mine was creating items, candles, bookmarks, decorating his grave, all these different more creative expressions.
Now, had you been into that before, doing candles and things?
To some level, yes. I've always been kind of a creative type. I'm not going to say I'm an artist, but just always creating.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted a little bit of James in people's lives all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, it started evolving from there and just pulling together ideas. And then I also had the same situation when I planned the funeral. I mean, I'd never even thought about what would be appropriate music or scripture readings or poetry. And I was, I hate to use the term, but I was at the mercy of whatever was available to me at the funeral home. And so, there's volumes of beautiful things out there that I could have, tailored a little more personalized for my son.
Well, and there's so many major decisions you have to make about a funeral when you're at the lowest point of your life.
Yes.
It's very overwhelming.
Oh, yes,
mm-hmm.
Yes. And, even if it wasn't particularly the bereaved parent that did all these little details, even if others in the family knew about it, they could go to, our website and help, find things that were more appropriate for, the person that died.
And so you've got your website that people can go to. And
right.
It's, do you want to give us that?
It's www.memoryjar.org. And there's kind of a cute story that goes in the naming of the company. My son James was, an entrepreneur from day one. And he was always figuring out ways to make money and things like that. So I thought, wouldn't it be cute if I could, call this place, James's Place or James's Store. And all those names were taken on the internet. So I put out an email to my family and friends that we got to come up with a cute name. And they knew I was, always collecting memories and things like that. So my sister Lynn and her son Michael played around with words and came up with Memory Jar. And the word jar are my son's initials,
wow.
James Anthony Rodriguez.
Ah.
And it kind of went along the lines. We produced a jar where you can put, either collecting memories at the funeral where people just write little notes or your greeting cards can fit in there or, if it was putting your loved one's favorite cookies or candy. But it's just a kind of a pleasant way to have them right in front of you and to reinforce the importance of keeping those memories because that's all you have now. That's mm-hmm. all you have.
So on your site you have your memory jar and then you have different, tell us what's on that site besides that, planning a funeral, music?
Yeah, we give a lot of details on, you know, planning the funeral, from, you know, scripture selections. We actually even have something called a funeral checklist. I know it sounds kind of silly, but when I was planning James's funeral, there were so many integral parts that I was never informed about. For example, submitting an obituary and, you know, how to even begin to write something like that. writing a eulogy and just different ways to start collecting the memories at the funeral, because that's when you have actually the best group, you know, people coming from all over to give their final respects. And they might have a silly little story that
right.
you would never have known about.
So with our audience out there whose children have already died, maybe they planned the funeral, you're saying that they could have a little memory jar now when people come to visit where they could put in some memories too?
Yes. I know with mine, I have the cards that I continually receive from my friends and family, and I just stick them in the jar. And I'll tell you, I get a lot of peace and comfort just seeing all those warm wishes and knowing that people are remembering my son.
Mm-hmm. All right. Wonderful. Well, we have someone who's called in. Actually, I asked her to call in, Susan Fraser. Hi, Susan.
Hi, how are you?
And Susan has a business that she has formed, too. And your son died?
My son died on Mother's Day in 95.
Uh-huh. He was drowned?
No. He passed away in a swimming pool, but he had hypertrophic cardiac myopathy, mm-hmm. which meant that over a period of about 7 years, which was undetected, his heart had grown closed, and he was just swimming across the pool and died.
Wow. Well, could you tell us about your organization and how did you get started with that?
Well, I had started selling keepsakes as pendants and mainly pendants to hold either a bit of cremains or a lock of hair, things like that. And our company formed into InTheLightUrns.com. And In the Light Urns is now a company that offers about 450 urns and keepsakes. And we're always striving to offer personalization because really wasn't a lot out there before we came along. We really did pioneer quite a few unusual keepsakes that could, you know, help one feel closer to the person they lost with something that was a close remembrance of what they enjoyed.
Right, and this fits in with our continuing bonds, right, Heidi? Both the memory jar and the
mm-hmm.
urns.
Absolutely, and I had a question about, for both Karen and Susan, do funeral homes have access to your website so when someone walks in and they're grieving and they don't even have the wherewithal to go on the Internet, they can say, okay, these are two sites you need to log on to at this point in order to you know, help this process in order to help you along the way and give you information. I mean, do people have to be proactive and go on the Internet and find you?
Well, as far as In the Light Urns, that is a retail site, and we do have a mm-hmm. site, UnitedUrns.com, and that's for funeral homes, and we do trade shows, and they do come to our website, and they do purchase product from us. But the way funeral homes usually find us is that they just get on the Internet and find our retail site, or people find our retail site. But quite often, funeral directors just don't have the variety that people want, and they tell their clients to go online and look.
Mm, okay.
And we get that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how about you, Susan?
You know, I'm so much newer to this than Susan is. I've really only been live for about 4 months. I've been testing the waters with the funeral homes, but I haven't had much success there. I've had better luck with hospice organizations and social workers
Very
in the
good.
Hospitals that they give this immediately to the families.
We're going to come up on break now, and when we get back from break, Susan, would you stay on with us?
Sure.
I'd like to talk a little bit with both Susan and Karen about what things that they see with the families that they interface with and get some advice from both of them. We're coming up on break now, and I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, and we're talking to Karen Nee today about supporting bereaved families, making the necessary decisions of loss, and we have a guest, Susan Fraser, on. Please stay tuned for more.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
The incidence of autism has increased at an alarming rate. Autism One, a conversation of hope, hosted by Betsy Hicks, illuminates how right now there is more reason than ever for individuals with autism spectrum disorders and their families to have the best hope for the brightest future. Autism is treatable, and given appropriate therapies, children are recovering. With well-known researchers and doctors, members of Congress, and expert service providers from a wide range of disciplines, Betsy offers interviews and insights highlighting the progress in areas related to autism spectrum disorders, such as biomedical research and treatment, communication, education, and behavioral modalities, adult services, sociological and philosophical issues, and legislative advocacy and insurance concerns. Autism One, a conversation of hope, broadcast each Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Autism One, a conversation of hope. Through education and conversation, there is hope. In the realm of mental health, psychiatry is often misunderstood. On Good Psychiatry is Good Medicine with host and forensic psychiatrist Dr. Ron Kennedy Bailey. Find out the truth behind the myths, rumors, disparities, and misconceptions about the broad spectrum of mental illness and treatment options. Dr. Bailey educates and informs with truthful, factual, honest, and direct communication of information regarding mental health issues and topics to further enhance the overall medical and legal areas in healthcare. For the best information on ADHD, psychopharmacology, forensic, and psychiatric health concerns, tune into Good Psychiatry is Good Medicine with Dr. Ron Kennedy Bailey every Thursday at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Hi, this is Mark Victor Hansen. You know me for Chicken Soup for the Soul, the 1 Minute Millionaire, and Cracking the Millionaire Code. And what I want you to know is that if you want to have rip-roaringly good health, listen to Health Crusades by my friend John Farley.
Tune in to Health Crusades with John Farley every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
We now rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who suffer the loss of a loved one.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I am your co-host, Dr. Heidi, with my mom and host, Dr. Gloria. Our topic today is supporting bereaved families making the necessary decisions of loss, and our guest is Karen Nee. Karen is a bereaved parent whose son, James, 19, died in a car accident in 2003. She and her family, including surviving son Robert, have worked to create the nonprofit organization Memory Jar to help other families facing death. Karen's primary goal is to honor her son by helping others during this very difficult time. Although her grief journey is still in the early stages, there is a certain peace that is obtained knowing that her son is being honored with each family she helps. Welcome back to the show, Karen, Susan, and Gloria.
Thanks, Heidi.
Thank you.
Well, when we went to break, I was saying that I wanted to talk a little bit about, first of all, I'd like to talk a little bit about how Susan Fraser got into the business of the Light Urns business. We know from Karen Nee that she got into it after her son James died to help other families. Susan, how did you start your business and when?
It was about 5 years after my son died before I did start. And the keepsakes were really important. And I had done all kinds of things to remember my son. Each year we did something special at Christmas.
What did you do? People are going to want to know. What special things did you do?
We made a Christmas ornament every year.
Uh-huh.
And this year we did 11 years of the ornaments. And then this year, our 12th year, we did a teddy bear. And that, on our website, we do offer teddy bears made from the deceased clothing. And I finally had my teddy bears made on his birthday in May this year. And
so people can send in all their deceased child or some of their clothing, and then you make a teddy bear for them.
I like that.
I had his Boy Scout uniform because he was a senior patrol leader when he passed away, and I had his baptism outfit and little Oshkosh Begosh jeans that I saved and all kinds of little things that he had worn in his older, you know, shorts that the kids wore. And it was 95 when he passed, so they were really just getting into big T-shirts and baggy pants and backwards caps, and and so we incorporated all of that, and he enjoyed that. And
now, can you, if you did have a cremation, can you put cremains, is that what they're called, in the teddy bear?
Everything that we offer holds either cremains, a lock of hair, crushed flowers, earth from a grave. So my son wasn't cremated. He was buried. And at that time, we had had, you know, as everyone does in their family, deaths, well, most people do have deaths throughout their family, and burial was the way we always went. If I'd had a choice today, I would have had my son cremated. But I didn't at that time even know much about cremation. And I think it's, personally, I think it's the way to go. It's a cleaner way, and you have so many ways to remember a person. You can scatter their ashes on a mountaintop in the ocean. You can keep them at home with you, and you know, so there's a lot of different ways you can.
Yeah, a lot of personal choices to be made
absolutely.
At this time, which gets
yeah.
me to Karen. What about these personal choices that people are trying to make? You help them?
You know, I try at this level, at this point, not to get too involved in people's personal issues.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer to remain just a resource, like, you know, if you need to make that decision, why don't you look at this or read this?
Now, how do you interface with people, mostly through the Internet?
Yes, I get a lot of emails, yes.
Uh-huh. And so you're not connected up. Do people come to you early, Susan, or?
It depends. I had a woman phone yesterday who, and we work with people and pets, and she called yesterday, and she had a really hard time getting out the dates of her dog, the Wonder Dog, she called him, that she wanted engraved on the plate, and she was giving me the year he passed, and she said November 2005, and I said, is that 6? And she said no, and she's in tears telling me a year ago her dog passed away. So with cremation, people don't have to make an immediate decision. Some people do and some people don't. Sometimes they just get the cremains in the temporary plastic box, and they keep it at home, and they try to decide what to do. You know, everybody couldn't be there for a service. Should we wait a year and scatter the ashes? Or they want to do it right away. They want it interred. They want them buried. They want an urn. They need keepsakes overnighted. So everybody's different.
Uh-huh. So everybody has a unique difference.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, tell me, both of you, I was going to ask you, what do you see as being some of the biggest challenges for parents? You know, I think it's time for us to go to break now. Trying to see if it is. I guess I'll tell me if it is. So go ahead. What do you see some of the biggest challenges?
I would say for, this is Karen, I would say for, it still comes back to our culture just isn't comfortable with talking about death.
Mm-hmm.
And I surround myself with a lot of other bereaved parents, and that gives me, you know, the peace and helps me get through the day many, many, many times. But boy, you go outside of that little cocoon of understanding, and I start talking about James or the things that I'm doing to memorialize him or talking about him, and there's a huge level of discomfort amongst others.
Right. And how about you? Do you see that same thing, Susan?
No, I would say the most difficult thing for parents is that it never goes away. The grieving never goes away. And people think that, oh, it's been 10 years, it must be better. It's always there.
Now, have you gone out to a group at all? And I was wondering if... Karen,
I have my daily therapy.
Yeah, Karen, is it Compassionate Friends that you're connected with? Or
I have done Compassionate Friends. I do Compassionate Friends, and I also have another independent grief group, and I have done a lot of therapy in the last 3 years,
mm-hmm.
a lot, and I will continue it the rest of my life, I assume.
How about you, Karen? I mean, Susan, have you done any, like, Compassionate Friends or any group things, I wondered?
No.
Mm-hmm.
I just talk to people every day who lose people.
Mm-hmm.
I have people who call and they've lost a son who's a similar age or a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'm talking to people all the time. You know, they tell me theirs. I mean, I don't open up until somebody does want to talk, and then I tell them I understand I've lost a son as well, and that sort of thing. So, you know, it's not a daily thing that I tell people about my own son, obviously, but I am dealing with people who are grieving every day. So,
and it's good to interface with people that have been through what we've been through, because then we know that we're not alone, and then mm-hmm. it's normal that the pain lasts, mm-hmm. you know, such a long time, and it changes over time, but it's you always miss that person.
Yes.
And it's so interesting to, I love hearing how you both are doing things, you're kind of moving along, and you've taken different, you know, roads. You're not doing a grief group, and Karen is. And I think it's so important for our audience to hear this, because it's my experience that sometimes you'll have a husband and a wife, and the husband will say, you've got to go to group, there's no, you know, and the wife doesn't want to go, or vice versa, and we can, you know, we grieve in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
But it's time for a break now, and I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, and we're talking to Karen Nee of MemoryJar.org, and we're also talking to Susan Frazier of InTheLightEarns.com. Please stay tuned for more of our discussion about the loss of a child and coping.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
This is Dr. Gloria Horsley. Just a reminder to our listeners that you can own 10 of the very best Healing the Grieving Heart shows, available on CD. Our listeners tell us that they have used these shows to examine the many viewpoints of grief and to stimulate conversation on this difficult subject. Call toll-free 877-969-0010, that's 877-969-0010, to order a set, or visit the CompassionateFriends.org website and click on TCF Originals for the opportunity to purchase this specially priced set at only $60 for 10 CDs plus shipping and handling. Heidi and I have donated all the proceeds to the Compassionate Friends to help bereaved families following the death of a child.
Omega Institute is the country's leading center for holistic studies. Now you can experience selected workshops from Omega in the comfort of your own home. Join us for a live web broadcast with John Friend, the founder of Anasara Yoga. In this dynamic workshop, we learn the Hatha Yoga system that is a celebration of the heart and looks for the good in all people and all things. To find out more about our live web broadcast, log on to our website, www.eomega.org. That's www.eomega.org. Or call us at 800-944-1001. That's 800-944-1001.
Dating should be less about matching superficial interests and more about being comfortable expressing your inner being. When you're living with a special health condition, dating becomes a difficult balance between complete honesty and fear of judgment. This emotionally vulnerable dance can end up a frustrating experience. There is an option. On Finding Love with a Special Condition, hosts Ricky Michael Durham and Dr. Sherry Meltz discuss various conditions from AIDS, HIV, cancer, obesity, deafness, diabetes, IBS, infertility, and impotence to allergies, herpes, and hepatitis, and offer support, alternatives, and opportunities to develop friendships and relationships built on understanding and honesty. Finding Love with a Special Condition broadcasts each Tuesday at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Finding Love with a Special Condition with Ricky Michael Durham and Dr. Sherry Meltz. Acceptance and love with understanding and honesty.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
We now rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who suffer the loss of a loved one.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm your co-host, Dr. Heidi, with my mom and host, Dr. Gloria. Our topic today is supporting bereaved families making the necessary decisions of loss, and our guest is Karen Nee. Karen is a bereaved parent whose son, James, 19, died in a car accident in 2003. She and her family, including surviving son, Robert, have worked to create the nonprofit organization Memory Jar to help other families facing death. Karen's primary goal is to honor her son by helping others during this very difficult time. Although her grief journey is still in the early stages, there is a certain peace that is obtained knowing that her son is being honored with each family she helps. Welcome back to the show, Karen, Susan, and Gloria.
Thanks, Heidi. Well, we've got Susan Fraser, who's been very kind enough to call into the show, and her website is inthelighturns.com. And Susan's son, Ryan, died in 1995, and she has gone on to start this business, and we're very inspired by people who are able to go on and do these kinds of things, Susan, and thank you so much. I know it means a lot to our listeners to hear about your life.
Thank you.
Thanks, Susan.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Well, Heidi, we were talking a little bit when we went on break. It's been great to have Susan on, wasn't it? She's really inspiring. But you talked about how you and Karen met, and I think we ought to talk about that a little bit because it has something to do with siblings.
Okay. Let's see, Karen. We met in July at the Compassionate Friends Conference, right? Isn't that
correct.
Where we met?
Uh-huh. I went to hear your session because I was curious about how siblings grieve because I was worried about my surviving son, Robert.
Yeah, so I gave a workshop to the parents about their teens and young adults and how they grieve and what they're going through because a lot of times they're not talking about it,
mm-hmm.
as you all know. I mean, they're not really saying what's going on for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is how we met. And I guess listening to the show, the thing that keeps coming up for me in my head over and over, and I wasn't really sure how to put it out there because, you know, I'm always the gadfly here, because I'm the sibling voice, and so what comes up for me is some of the siblings tell me that there's too many reminders around the house and that it's overwhelming, that they need places that they can go to get away from the grief sometimes, and they don't want memorials in every single room.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to put that out there. I wondered how that was for your son, if you ever felt like it was too much or if you were able to balance it, and for your surviving son, Robert.
You know, he's never really said anything to me about it, and, you know, I told you I'm kind of the creative type, so yes, there are a lot of reminders, and of course, I attached very quickly onto the butterfly theme because it symbolizes everlasting life and a lost child, so everybody calls me the butterfly lady now, and yet my son, Robert, at every holiday or birthday, I get something with a beautiful butterfly on it.
That's nice.
So, you know, he definitely is reinforcing, you know, my grief,
mm-hmm.
and that he wants me to remember James also through the butterfly.
Mm-hmm. I love that. You know, I have a butterfly tattoo on my ankle. I don't know if you saw it when I was lecturing, but you know, for me, you saw it?
Yes.
Okay.
That's what I mean. So that we had a bond.
Yeah, the butterfly bond. For me, it originally symbolized the death of my brother and my cousin Matthew, mm-hmm. leaving this world before their time.
Mm-hmm.
Now it symbolizes those that have left and new life that has come in.
Yes.
New people that have come in that I've met along my journey, that have come into my family, new people that I meet. So it's people leaving and people coming in. It's two ways now, which is very healing for me.
You know, that's a really key point that I learned after James died. Someone said early on, you're going to get a new address book. And I didn't really understand.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm telling you, in the last 3 years, I have met some of the most unbelievable human beings.
Mm-hmm. And people have come into your life also.
And if you're going to talk about something good coming out of, you know, the horror of losing a child, I can say that I have just the most wonderful circle of friends.
Mm-hmm.
You just see human beings at a whole different level of compassion and love.
Mm-hmm.
So I know exactly what you're saying, Heidi. Exactly.
Yeah, and it was interesting, Compassionate Friends, because this year, were you there for the butterfly release?
I had to leave. I had to catch a plane back to California.
Oh, okay, well, Mom, it was amazing, right? They released, butterflies, Mom?
I don't know.
500 or something? Well, what was interesting is you saw the butterflies leave, but then you'd see some of them come back and mm-hmm. land on you.
Yeah,
they were constantly leaving, and there were some coming back as well, which, you know, it was interesting to me from thinking.
I have a lot of little nieces and nephews, and if a butterfly will flutter by, they'll go, "Hi, James." And I just love that.
Well, Karen, it's almost time to close our show, and I want to say it's great that in, 2 years you've been able to start Memory Jar, and I hope that the organization goes on to be very successful
Thank
and
you.
Very helpful and helpful to those people who have lost children.
Thank you.
And best wishes to your family, and particularly to your son and his journey along with his mom. And Heidi and I will be having a new book coming out in the spring called What Parents Need to Know to Help Their Grieving Teens.
And if there's one thing, since you were so, you're kind of where a lot of our listeners are as far as you've only been 3 years away from the death of your son, if there was one bit of advice that you would give the listeners as far as what's been helpful, what do you think that would be?
So many things, but I would say first and foremost to surround yourself with other parents who have lost children.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any substitute for, you know, being able to be true and real to all these processes that are going on inside of you, unless you're with people that understand.
Thank you, Karen. That's a wonderful thought to close with, and thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
And it's
Thanks,
time to
Karen.
Close our show, and please stay tuned again until next week when our topic will be dealing with traumatic loss. And our guests will be Lawrence Calhoun and Rich Tedeschi, professors of psychology at UNC Charlotte and specialists in trauma and bereavement. This show is archived on our website, healingthegrievingheart.org, as well as the Compassionate Friends website. This is Dr. Gloria Horsley and
Dr. Heidi Horsley.
Thank you for joining us today on Healing the Grieving Heart. Join us again next Thursday at the same time on Voice America Health and Wellness.